Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having us. Maybe I'll start off by introducing my family. My wife's here, Martha. And children, stand up. My oldest daughter is Rachel. And my second born is Bob. Rachel's going to be 15. Bobby's 13. Then our daughter Anna, who is 12. And our daughter Mary, who is what? 9. And our youngest is Christiana, who is 8. Okay. So we're very thankful that you've had us come. What I want to do, I'm going to hand off the microphone to Martha. I'll let Martha kind of introduce the work to you. And when we get into some of the more technical aspects of the work, I'll take over from her. Here you go, sweetie.
Thanks, John. Here we go. All right. I don't know how much. Can you hear me okay, by the way? Or should I? Microphone. Okay. I'll be sitting with my back to you, I guess, because of this. Or is this okay? Am I blocking the view? All right. Good. I don't know how much you know about Uganda already, so I'll just take a few minutes to introduce you to the place where we are and the people we work with among the Karamojong and the missionaries as well, so you have a little bit of an idea. Some of you have heard the Akans speak before, I think, so you'll hopefully recognize a few faces up here, both among the missionaries and the Karamojong. Let's see. Let's take it away. Slideshow. Oh, there we go. Good. Well, this is where Uganda is. It's in Central East Africa. It was a British colony for many years. They got their independence about 45 years ago. It was called the Pearl of Africa in its day because it was, parts of it are very fertile, very good for farming. And in its day, our region, which is called Karamoja up there in the northeast, was one of the biggest sources of ivory in East Africa. Not surprisingly, we don't see wildlife all around where we are. The elephants are mostly gone. They're in game parks and things like that. So when you see our homes, no, we're not surrounded by giraffes and antelopes and things like that, but it's still a very beautiful place that we enjoy living. Our station is called Nakale. That's the name of the town land, and it refers to the thorn trees that grow there. The other station is Mbali, which is a relatively large city down a little farther, and that's where the Bible College is, and it's where the Akans are living right now. This is our group as of a couple of months ago. It's quite a gang between Mbali and Nakale stations that includes the pastors, various different workers of different kinds, and visitors as well. Now, down in the city, in Mbali Station, you have the proctors. They're on furlough at the moment, touring the United States as well. Phil works with Thomas Mayville, who's a pastor from Southern California, just arrived a few months ago. And also Barry and Ann James come about every other year to work for a few months. They both teach at Knox Theological College. This is Phil in action with his group. This past May, they had their first ever graduation, which was a very joyous occasion for quite a few of the fellows. They've been working for years to finish their certificates, and even Douglas Clausen, the second from the left, came from the United States. He's our Associate General Secretary of Foreign Missions, came to celebrate the occasion with them. They hope to be in a new building on a site slightly outside the city of Mbali. This is it under construction. It's probably well on the way by now, because this was a couple of months ago. Mbali is the third largest city in Uganda. This is where we go for a lot of our major shopping. Bob gets a lot of his materials here. It's a very busy street, a very busy city, and here's a busy street there in the market area. But when you leave Mbali, this is more what it looks like. This may look a little more familiar to some of you folks out here in Texas. To us in New Jersey, this looks like the end of the earth. When people take a look at that road, they just gasp. And this is sometimes what it's like trying to get there during the rainy season. Thankfully, this bunch of passengers off the gateway bus helped push us and the Akans through that mud the same day. A lot of what Bob needs to help the pastors with is just living, just getting to work, just being there, because he has the technical skills that most pastors don't have. I don't think they teach you how to get your van out of the mud in seminary. But because of Bob's technical training, he's able to make sure the pastors can actually get to where they need to go. When you reach Karamoja, this is downtown Namalu. Namalu is a trading center about 7 miles from our house, And downtown on a market day looks about like this. We actually get a lot of our regular supplies there right close by. They have a lot of things that we need and use. On the left are the colorful blankets like the one here on the table that traditionally have been what the men wear in Karamoja. In recent years, they have added shorts to their wardrobe, which we appreciate a lot. But typically, it was just a blanket thrown over one shoulder, flapping in the breeze. And the women, it's really true, actually. The women use these same blankets and cloths to carry their babies, carry things on their heads, and do a lot of the work that needs to be done there. The Karamojong live in little villages like these. In Kiswahili, they call it a manyata. In the Karamojong language, they call it an ere. And they live in stick and mud houses with thatched roofs. And in the middle, surrounded by a thorn fence, is where they keep their cattle. In the daytime, the cattle are out grazing. But that's where they keep them at night, kind of like the olden days in the West when they'd circle up the wagons around the group. Well, they protect their cows with their very lives. Their cattle are their bank accounts, their future, their wealth. They're very, very important to them, largely because you need to spend a lot of cows to buy a wife. When you get married there, it's a bit the opposite of what we have here. The wife's family doesn't pay for the wedding. The husband's family has to pay maybe 60, 80, 100 cows for a wife, which is a fortune to them, an absolute fortune. And it's more than they can raise, than a young man can raise in his youth. So their custom has been to steal cattle from neighboring tribes. So this has gone back and forth for hundreds of years. And sadly, is a large part of the quality of life there, is that people expect to get raided. They expect perhaps to go out and to go on a raiding party and be killed. They have this warrior mentality that leads them to believe that that sort of thing is honorable. Stealing and murder, sadly, are the basis of the economy there. This is actually right near our church building at the base of an extinct volcano, Mount Kadam. The women are very highly valued, although not well treated, in the society in Karamoja. They do most of the work. They grow the grain, they harvest it, they process it, they grind the grain, they cook the porridge that they eat most days, they build the houses, they care for the children, they carry the children, they fetch the firewood, fetch the water. They do most of what needs to be done around the homes. While the men are supposed to be watching cattle, they usually pass that job off on some of the younger boys, and again, sadly, spend a lot of their time sitting under trees, in many cases just drunk and dissolute. Their society has a lot of problems, and it can be hard to reach them with God's word. A typical family here, the grandmother on the left, the new mother, and her young daughter, which, because I visited that day, they named Martha after me. But I'm sorry to report, little Martha didn't survive, even to this time. She died at the age of 2 or 3, which is very, very typical there. The infant mortality rate, we estimate, is about 50%. That is to say, somewhere between half and three-quarters of the children do not survive to age 5, largely because of malaria and other diseases, diphtheria, typhoid, and waterborne illnesses. When the Karamojong are enjoying themselves, they have big circle dances out in the kraal. Sometimes the grandmothers come decked out in some ashes that they applied with I think, a soda bottle, and their beads and blankets and things. These young boys are the ones who are often out herding the cattle, but most of these boys, they're being raised to be warriors, to be maybe big men in their villages. They'll hope to grow up someday to raid cattle and get as many wives as they can possibly buy. In their society, going to school isn't necessarily very highly valued, so none of these young fellows will probably ever go to school, but that's what they choose to do with a lot of their kids. They don't have the same emphasis on education that we would have. When we want to find them, this is Pastor Dave Aachen under a tree with a group of fellows, mostly men, I think, and some women off to the side for a Bible study. And this is where we spend a lot of our time with the Karamojong when we meet with them. And here's a brief history of the work up there in Karamoja. My husband Bob first went out with Pastor Tony Curto, who's about the fifth man from the right there, and Dr. Herbert Previous next to him. They were interested in starting a medical work up there because of the lack of health care in that area. Karamoja has been looked down on by most of the rest of Uganda. Their health care system is almost non-existent. They have hospitals and things, but they're empty. The drugs have been stolen and sold. The people don't come to work. So they had very, very little to work with, and people were begging us to come there. By 2001, we had moved in, and that was the group that came to visit our first Sunday. When Bob and the guys first got there, this is pretty much what it looked like. In the middle, you see a bunch of a squarish sort of group of trees. There was a big abandoned ranch house there, and they thought it would be good to renovate. By January, a group from Billings, Montana, a fantastic team, had come to do some of the renovations, and Pastor Tony Curto was able to live there and begin preaching. All during that time, though, he and his family, his three adopted boys, Douglas, Isaac, and Ivan, were there, and Bob and his workers were living in tents all around the place, getting it ready for the missionaries to live in. By 2003, when we came back from a period in the States, the clinic was up and running. It was put together from some modified shipping containers. They have a laboratory, a pharmacy. We were still meeting under the church tree. A lot of work had gotten done on the main compound, and another house had been built that was originally for Pastor Curto, and then when he was relocated to Mbali, we moved in. As of now, this is what the place is like. We have an open-air church building. There's been a lot of renovation done, a school building, new missionary housing. Our house is going to be renovated for the Akins to move into this fall, and there's been more construction done on the clinic and the neighboring buildings. Let me introduce you to the missionaries who are there in Nakale. This is our gang, whom you just met. Pastor Al Tricarico and his family came about 2.5 years ago and have been just a wonderful blessing to the mission. Al and Dave Akin work together, going around to the villages, preaching in different sites on Sundays as well. And their family has been just a wonderful blessing to ours in terms of fellowship and folks for our kids to pal around with and do school with. Bob works very closely with Craig Aldean here. Craig and his wife are from Billings, Montana. Craig came with the original renovation team about 7 years ago, and he and his wife decided to come, and they are now long-term missionaries with our group. Craig does a lot of the maintenance construction, and Chris is, she's not a doctor, but she does the administration for the clinic. She makes sure that people come to work, that the pharmacy gets stocked, and that everything runs smoothly. Pastor Dave Akin and his family are now living in the city of Mbali. His wife Sunshine is expecting their third child this November, so please keep them in prayer. They'll be traveling to the States in about, well, Sunshine and the kids will be coming to the States in about a month, because she's expecting to deliver in November. We were also blessed this past year to have a number of missionary associates. Missionary associates are the kind of short-time additional volunteers who come and do different things. We were blessed to have three teachers, which was just fantastic. Chrissy Schichtans has come back for a second year and is in Karamoja right now. Amy DeWitt down the lower left, you may have seen on the cover of New Horizons. She is one of our star missionaries there. She actually ended up spending 3 years teaching the missionary kids and doing Bible studies. And Donna Smith came all the way from the Isle of Lewis, way out on the northwest coast of Scotland, and was just a fantastic and wonderful person to have with us. So we even got to, in remote Karamoja, we were even learning to sing songs in Scottish Gaelic, and we had quite a variety of cultures there. And if I can put in a little plug at this point in time, none of these delightful people are going to be there next year. When we go back to Uganda about a year from now, we would love to have someone come and help us teach our kids. So if you know anybody who's interested in doing some teaching, it can be a man or woman. It doesn't have to be a lady school teacher. Please talk to me, or you can email us. We'd really like to have somebody come and work with us too. Ed Wright joined us. He's not a relative. He's from the Frederick, Maryland Church. Did a lot of work with Bob. He spent many hours with his head under the hoods of different vehicles and using different machinery to help Bob do the different projects that he had underway at the time. He just came back as to the States after another team was there this summer doing quite a bit of work. So at this point in time, Bob can tell you in more detail about exactly the kind of work he does. And Here you go, Bob.
Thanks, Martha. Well, as your pastor said, this work is your work. You guys especially have a relationship with Pastor Aachen, which is wonderful. So do I. You are helping to make it possible for him to be there. That's also my job. The deacons exist in the church so that the pastors can devote themselves to the ministry of the word and prayer. And that's basically what Craig and I do in Uganda. We make sure everything happens that needs to happen so the families can live there. As it says here, our responsibility, and I say our, I mean Craig and I are interchangeable. I'm in the States now, Craig's there, Craig's coming home in October, I'm going to go back over to cover him for a month when he's on vacation. But both of us work pretty much as a team. At this time, I'm the deacon missionary, and Craig works alongside me. But we're responsible for all the construction of everything that needs to be built there, whether it's missionary housing, clinic facilities, staff housing for the clinic. We've switched all of the energy systems, which basically are anything and everything that needs to either turn on or light or refrigerators. We switched over from generators to solar and wind power several years ago. So a huge change for the mission. It's worked out really well. We're very thankful for that. We're also, Craig and I have to make sure all the vehicles run. As Martha pointed out earlier on, the mud's a big problem. We got to make sure these guys can get to the Bible studies, they can get to town, we can get supplies. If the vehicles don't run, things shut down. We have to procure the supplies for either the mission itself or for the clinic. There's a lot of medicine that has to be brought up to our medical clinic. We also have 190 acres of land, which we've bought, that we are farming, which we use. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. I have a crew of between 8 and 10 men who work with me daily on the various construction projects we're doing. And we are involved in a lot of vocational training with these guys. And we also do a lot of community service and outreach. As Martha mentioned, when we first came to Uganda in 1998, Martha and I were asked to consider getting involved in this work in Uganda. We had previously worked in Eritrea. We were there rebuilding the hospital that was destroyed in the civil war in Ginda. But when we got that basically to a point where it was up and functional, the government wouldn't renew any of our work permits. And they actually came in and nationalized the clinic, so we came back to the States. I took up contracting again. I was a general contractor in the States before I went to Uganda, or to Eritrea, or Uganda. So I just went back to work for a few years. We were praying about Africa, praying about the future, and finally I got a phone call from the head office saying they wanted to start this work in Karamoja. So Dr. Previous, Dr. Curto, and I went up looking to see what was possible, and we found this abandoned ranch house through a guy that Herb knew in Mbali, and we started renovating it. This is the first team that came from Billings, Montana, and this is the first time that Craig Eldeen came. Craig Eldeen came and visited us three times. The third time, he brought his wife to see how she would like being there. Craig's in Uganda right now serving our church because he went on short-term mission trips. I'm there because I went on short-term mission trips. So we sincerely encourage people to come to the field. Come and see if this is something that the Lord is laying on your heart that you might want to do to serve His kingdom. This is the group of men who came from Billings. We basically had to renovate the houses completely. They were destroyed during Idi Amin's time. The Karamojong had been using them to store animals, so we had a lot of manure to shovel out. But this is basically what we wound up with. Now, we had to add on to the property when Al and Lori came because they have boys and girls. Herb was using this main house to live in, and he had just two bedrooms, his girls and his wife and himself. But Al and Lori needed another room, so we added on a bedroom. That's basically what it looks like today. Martha and I live in a house that we had built for Dr. Curto. As Dr. Curto was redeployed down to Mbali and now subsequently he's come back to the States, he's teaching at Greenville Seminary. Martha and I lived in this house, but now we've actually built additional housing, and Pastor Dave and Sunshine, Lord willing, when the baby comes in November and they move back in January, they're going to move into this house. So I just got an email from Craig this morning. He said they got everything done. He's going to leave the plumbing and electrical for me to do in October. Oh, boy. As I said, we've converted over to alternative energy. We are about 2.5 hours north of the Ugandan power grid. which actually is a real blessing because poor Phil lives in Mbali, poor Pastor Dave lives in Mbali right now, and they're out of power about half the time. We have power all the time. We also can drink the water. We drill our own wells. We put in our own water system. So people feel like we're really roughing it up north when actually we feel as though we're much better off than the missionaries down in the town. Martha cooks often with a solar oven. It's very hot there. The climate is not so different from Texas. It gets up, I guess, in the middle of the dry, 110, 115. It is very dry. It's not very humid. We have a rainy season that lasts 3 to 5 months, depending on the year. It's different from year to year. But as the Scripture says, how then can they call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. Our church has a fantastic window of opportunity working among the Karamojong. There are 500,000 Karamojong. There are 9 subgroups within that group, but they all speak the same language. There are 2 Protestant mission agencies working among this whole 500,000 people. There's a Southern Baptist couple living up in Kabong, 6 hours north of us. He's an agricultural officer. The only 2 ministers of the gospel, the only 2 Protestant ministers of the gospel missionaries in Karamoja are Dave and Alter Carrico. The Lord has made a really wonderful opportunity for us to be there. And Craig and I are there to make it possible for those brothers to dedicate themselves to the ministry of word and prayer. The regular ministries of the word, on Sunday, there are 3 worship services in Nakale Village, Kopetatum Village, and in Namalu. There are Bible studies during the week for men and women and children in Nakale and Kopetatum. We have a fantastic opportunity to go into the school systems. The Ugandan school curriculum has a religious education course. And anytime we want to, we can walk into a school and say, hey, we'd like to help you teach your course. Martha's been able to do this. Amy's been able to do it. Al's been able to do it. We've been able to take teams from the United States and go and basically do VBS programs in the public schools. The government is very happy for us to do that. They're very willing, and they really make it easy. And then, of course, at our clinic, we have a fantastic opportunity through the morning devotions with the staff, or there are anytime any of the pastors want to, they can come and preach or teach to any of the groups of people who are there. This is a typical worship out in Kopetatum Village. You can see people basically sitting on the ground. And this is Pastor Dave teaching with our translator Lo Kui. We built basically just a roof system in Nakale Village. Concrete slab and poles. And then Pastor Al is teaching an afternoon service. We've all taught Sunday school at one time or another. Martha has been very involved in teaching children's Bible studies and Sunday school. Rachel's also helped out. All of our teachers have helped out. Katie Tricarico has helped out. It's a wonderful opportunity that we have. We sincerely believe that it's the future of this culture. If we are able to reach the children, talk to the children, and they're very eager and willing to come. Oh, sorry. During the week, Al and Dave go out to local villages behind us, and they usually look for a group of men sitting under a tree, which is pretty easy to find. Karamojong spend a lot of time sitting under a tree. It seems like drinking beer and talking about their next cattle raid takes a lot of their time. But while that's going on, the kids and the women are very eager to meet with either our teachers or anybody from the mission. The Karamojong are very, very friendly to us. They're very interested in us. We are a real oddity to them. The Catholic Church has been in Karamoja for 100 years. Most Karamojong had never seen a white child. They'd seen white men. They've seen white women. There are some nuns working up there. But even over the last maybe 20 years, more and more of the Europeans have been leaving. As these priests, the only priests we know a couple young ones, Walter and Lorenzo, but most of the priests are in their 80s that are in Karamoja. Old Italian guys, Belgian guys, German guys, Irish guys, really old though. And as they die or go back to Europe, they're not being replaced by Europeans. They're being replaced actually by Ugandans. And that creates all kinds of problems because the rest of Uganda considers this place like awful. The Karamojong are really stigmatized by the rest of Uganda because of their warlike cattle raiding ways. And most of the groups around the Karamoja region have been raided by Karamojong. The Teso in the west, the Bantu groups in the south. I mean, we go into Mbali town. If I go into a hardware store and say I'm buying materials, oh, where are you working? Up in Karamoja. Typically, the person behind the desk will say, are you not fearing the naked ones? I mean, why are you up there? What's wrong with you people? Well, we're there because the Lord has created this wonderful window of opportunity. But the fact of the matter is the Karamojong treat us really well. We are treated very well by them. We're received very well. This is a fella, Agiruas. He's the head guy at Moroadia village. We put a borehole in next to where they live. We put a water source in for them, a well. But the Karamojong are very, very interested in us. It pours rain during rainy season, typically in the afternoons. We can get 2 or 3 inches of rain in about 45 minutes. It blasts down all at once. It can be a bit of an impediment getting out to the village, or it can be an opportunity. When it's pouring rain, you duck into somebody's hut. You have a great opportunity to interact with them. But one of our biggest problems in Karamoja is alcohol. The Karamojong typically bring up this etule, it's called. It's grain alcohol. It's very powerful. When you mix a lot of AK-47s with a lot of drunk people, there's a lot of potential for disasters. Periodically, we have shootings in the villages. People just get drunk and start firing off their weapons at each other. There's a lot of domestic violence. As Martha said, a woman is property. She is paid for with cows. She belongs to the man. He can do with her as she wishes. Even members of the church, this is a real cultural issue, and it's not just in Karamoja, but all of Africa, East Africa that we know. Domestic violence is expected. We've been told by a guy who was a member of our church, if you don't beat your wife, she doesn't respect you. It's really sad. It's really terrible. So you get a guy who's half loaded half the time with a gun, he's very dangerous. He may beat his wife. He may beat his children. Even the wives beat the children. Now, we believe in spanking our kids. We do so as often as they need it. They may not agree with that, but we've had a woman hit her kid with a log, crushed her skull, and gave the kid brain damage. I mean, this is very, very bad. Serious problems with drinking. We've had a lot of wonderful opportunities, though. As I said, we can go into the schools. Here's a team who did a VBS program. We've had two teams come from the Reformed Presbyterian Church in North America, and they were able to go into the schools and do VBS programs. We were very well received, and it was, I think, very successful. Where they keep asking, when are you sending more people? When are more people coming? And they just love the visitors. This is a young lady, Heather Heising, who's now working with the RPCNA up in Awil, Sudan. She did a series of Bible studies with the local folks. But in terms of diaconal ministries, again, our primary responsibility is to make sure that the life-sustaining aspects of the missionary's world are there so they can do their work. They don't have to deal with figuring out how to get the lights to go on or making sure the toilet's flush. Craig and I make sure everything works. That's our first responsibility. But also, one of the big problems in Karamoja is because of the chronic shortage of rain, because of a lot of the sociological problems with Karamojong culture, they trade their food for booze. There are often chronic food shortages. And poor Pastor Dave, when we got to Karamoja, was completely besieged with requests for food and help. Now, this is also compounded by the fact that the Karamojong culture is very deceitful. To get over on somebody to get something is considered clever. That's an admirable thing to do. If you can con somebody into taking their stuff, you're a smart guy. Now, I'm from New Jersey. There's a lot of that that goes on here, too. And I'm sorry. But we typically, as a society, look down on it. You know, it's like it's not condoned. Well, I think in their society, it's really looked up at. I mean, people, you're a big man if you're able to get over. So lying is typically what you do. And there's an anthropological work that's done by a Catholic priest who lived there for 40 years, and he characterizes the Karamojong as opportunistic predators. There are three kinds of people. You're either part of their clan, which you take care of your family. You are the enemy, which is to be killed immediately upon sight. Or you are a non-person, which is to be stripped of their resources. You are something to be manipulated. That's who we are. Now, we're developing relationships with the Karamazong, but we'll never become Karamazong. I can't be a Karamazong elder. I've been asked to be a Karamazong elder. I can't promise to uphold their traditional customs, many of which are very sinful and very bad. Anyway, we've started the Work for Food program. That's what the farm is all about. We farm land. As people come, oh, we have no food, we're hungry, fine. Here's a hoe, dig. Bible says if you don't work, you don't eat. Come with us out in the field. We're going to go plant something. We go and work out in the field. At the end of the day, we're going to give you a can of grain. We were giving out money. The money was getting spent on booze. We only give out one can per day. One can isn't going to get you a whole lot of booze. And typically, if you're giving it to the women, they will feed the kids. They will feed their family. So, and many or most of the workers that do come to work on the farm are female. The medical clinic is a wonderful opportunity we have to show the love of Christ to these people. The vocational training, because the men are not accustomed to any sense of doing something to provide for themselves so they can take care of their own. Again, the scripture says, you know, he who doesn't take care of his own is worse than an infidel. That concept is foreign to the Karamazong. So we've got to, we're working on trying to teach them, emphasizing a Christian work ethic with biblical stewardship of their resources so they take care of their own problems through what they provide for themselves. We also do a lot of water projects, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Here are some Karamazong warriors. This is a typical age of a guy who's going to be looking at trying to steal some cows to buy a wife. As the scripture says, let him who steals steal no longer. These are some folks weeding sorghum on our field. But must work. These guys are clearing land, doing something useful, making bricks with his own hands that he might have something to share with him who has need. This is payday. Everybody gets one can of grain for one day's work. We do a lot of water projects. We can either spend all of our money buying medicine to treat Giardia, amoebiasis, cryptosporidia, or we can spend $1,000 drilling a well and putting in a clean water source. I'd rather treat the disease than the symptom. So the mission's really been supportive of this. I'm actually the country representative of a ministry called Living Waters International. It's a group out of Houston, Texas, who have developed a water drilling process. You can see this is dry season. Certain parts of Texas are a lot like this. This is one of our drilling rigs. This is a two-man post hole digger mounted on a piece of channel. We take that out to the site, and as you can imagine, with all these motors running and all this noise, it's like the circus coming to town. It's a great opportunity. People come. They're like, what on earth are you doing here? And it's a great opportunity to share the gospel. We've had teachers come, volunteers come. Rachel's been able to do it. We've also been involved in renovating windmills and installing windmills. Again, when we show up to do work, people are very curious. It's a great opportunity to share the gospel. We are the only group around that has any kind of serious tools, so when a disaster like this happens, they often come to us for help. As we're able to help them, it helps us develop our relationship with the local community and with the government. We can pull this guy out, got him back to our place, and we're able to get the truck started and get him on his way. Martha's done a lot of guest teaching at the local school. My wife has a doctorate in linguistics. She often teaches. She'll be teaching at Penn this fall when we get back after this trip. She's been able to do a lot of work for the mission, but also she's been doing a lot of work at the local school. She's been able to teach some of our church members how to read and write in their own language so they can read the Bible. The Bible does exist in Karamazong. The New Testament has been published in Karamazong. We've had interns come from Covenant College. This is Hayden Hill. And she was able to go out and spend a lot of time in the village. It's a great opportunity to interact with the local folks. But our farm project is continuing. We've had people come and help us with the farm project, whether they're plowing or working on tractors. But during the end of the planting season, we can have up to 200 people a day coming to work on the farm. And it's a great opportunity to share the gospel with them. No matter what the project is, no matter what we're actually physically doing, Every interaction we have is an opportunity. We've grown beans, maize, sorghum, sunflowers, peanuts. We've tried a variety of things. And again, it's an opportunity for us to interact in a larger way with the community. We have our regular Bible studies. We have our regular worship services. Well, if you're not saved, why would you waste your time going to church? How are you going to hear about the gospel? We have to go to the Karamojong. That's the whole point of why we're there. I mean, they may or may not come to church. Typically, they don't. Many don't. But many can hear. If they come to work on the farm and Al's able to give a devotional or share the gospel, who knows? Who knows what the Lord's going to do? We're trying to improve some of the farming techniques to help improve their productivity. We've brought in some grains from outside. This is a shorter sorghum that grows faster, that has a lot more production. This is their local sorghum. You have to understand that the stuff that they grow are things. The things they survive on are typically things we feed animals. We grind sorghum up in New Jersey and feed it to pigs. That's their staple food. Field corn. We grind that up and feed that to cows. They love field corn, maize. They love it. They would prefer it. Often there's not enough water to grow it. There's just not enough rainfall. But this is how we process our sorghum. This is how we've done it in the past. You cut the heads off, put it out, the women thresh it. But we were able, through a grant from the Committee on Diaconal Ministries, to buy some equipment. We now have a threshing machine, which helps us to put up the grain a lot faster. We have a lot less loss due to rot. So we're able to make a lot more effective use of the grain that the Lord provides us with. We're able to hire people to do small projects, thatching or whatever, and Al's able to share the gospel with them. But this is the workshop. Such as it is, we'll be building a building this year, but we've been able to teach a lot of different men to come to work on time and work and just do something. And we even have a credit union with the workers where we'll hold some of their salary. It's voluntary. If they want it all, we give it to them. It's their money. But a lot of them have asked if we could keep some of their money for them. There are no banks in Karamoja. If you have cash and you go home, your family descends upon you and begs you until it's gone. That's typical in their society. You have nothing. They're very communalistic. They're very communistic in the way they see property. If you have two, they'll come and they'll take one, definitely. I mean, it's really tough, and they're really hard on each other. Not just on us, they're really hard on each other. So we've been able to take some of their salary and hold it for them. Then when a guy comes to me and says, "Oh, I've got a disaster. My wife has to go to Mitanni for surgery. You know, can you please help me?" So, "Well, sure I can. I can help you." You can help yourself. You've got $200 saved up. You can pay for this surgery yourself. I think just the whole concept of stewardship is just so foreign to them. We've been able to do some things teaching the kids and working with the school. We've had a lot of outside projects. As visitors have come, they've been able to help us teach the men how to work. Everything that we haul up there has to come up at least 2.5 hours up from Mbali, or it has to come at least 6 hours up from the capital. And that's if the road's okay. If the road's bad, it might take 10 hours. You just don't know. So logistics is a huge part of what we have to do. But we've had some building projects that we started this year, and we've had to switch over the way we do things, trying to save the church money, trying to use what's more available. This is, we go down to the river and get sand. I'm sorry, I'm starting to move a little quickly here because I know we're hurting for time. When do we need to stop, Pastor? 20 of. Okay. We go down to the river and get sand. This is a quarry that we started in Kopetatum Village. Pastor Al and Pastor Dave have been very instrumental in the life of this man at the top, Leduc Albino. I first met Leduc when he came to the clinic with a severely malnourished child. We gave this family some help, some protein-rich food to try to help this kid out. But Leduc has had polio. He is not able to walk. He crawls on his hands and knees, and we were just really struggling with it. What can we do to help this guy? So we went to Kopetatum Village with a couple of hammers, like 2-pound mauls. I need aggregate to make concrete. We have all this concrete work we need to do, building all these buildings, so we gave him some hammers. First we told him, pick up all the stones you can that are about that big. That's what we need to make cement, make concrete out of. Anything other bigger than that, take the hammer and break it up and make it smaller. So in the series of events that have taken place in the past few years, Now there are about 50 people with hammers in Kopetatum Village, so they basically provide aggregate for us and for any other work that's being done, whether it's a government school being built or whatever. So this has been a very successful microenterprise venture. We pick up stone out of the fields, load them in our truck, and haul them to the site and start laying up a foundation. We use that crushed stone, sand. Cement has to come up from Mbali, so that's a big hassle getting it up there, but we're able to slab out and start laying up walls. The termites will eat anything and everything that's even remotely associated with wood. If it even smells like wood, they go after it. It's awful. So a lot of the work that we did when we initially got there, we've had to be redoing. We're tearing wood out of everything and replacing it. Actually, we're not even tearing the wood out. We're tearing the mud out that the termites have left. It's really a shame. So in building this new house, we decided to do everything out of steel. Now, we got to haul the steel up, but once we get it there, we were able to do the fabrication on site. And I was trying to decide what to do about windows and doors and roof system and all. And in God's providence, an RPCNA team came last year, and I looked on the applications of the men who were coming, and three of them were metal fabricators. So God really provided. We really knocked out a lot of work quickly. And it was kind of funny. Those three guys were all named Wright, not related to us. So for 6 weeks or however long they were there, we outnumbered the mission. It was great. But we manufactured everything on site, painted it up. Craig was getting all the masonry ready. We brought the frames over and started setting them. We laid all the stone up around them, as you can see. Chris Bonner, yeah. We had Texans over in Uganda. It was great. We love those guys. And Andy and Don were there. Yeah, we're really looking forward to seeing those guys. Lord willing, we will get down to Tyler. But we laid up all the stone. Now, in the middle of all this, we had all these kids and we had these teachers come. And this is what they were meeting in. And as you can see, the termites had done a pretty good job on it. The roof system was starting to fall down. It eventually did fall down. So we started putting a school together while we were on school break last year. We set poles, poured slabs. But we started making the roof system out of steel. A friend of mine that I met down in Kampala, who'd done some work in both in Uganda and Haiti, had been using this technique of making trusses out of rebar. And they're actually cheaper than wood, and the termites so far haven't been too interested in them. But we used these for the rafters, and once everything was welded up, now we use shipping containers to pick up speed. I had a couple used shipping containers. One of them we were using for sorghum. We had to get that out of there, but we picked them up and set them in place, and then started cutting holes for windows and doors. And again, we could have bricked them up, but it just would have taken so much time. We put purlins on the rafters, iron sheeted everything out, painted it all up, and we had a school. And we even had a place, there's Andy Smith right there. We even had a place, as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know him, he's an Irish step dancer. So that was part of our PE, was Irish step dancing. It was very. I was working up on the roof of the other house, so I had a pretty nice view of these guys jumping around. But it really worked out great for the kids. Teachers had plenty of room to spread out. I mean, it seems kind of funny. You know, we've got 10 kids. They had 3 teachers, but we've got 8 grades. So it's a little complicated keeping everybody on track. And it just really worked out well. We were really blessed. And I'm very happy to report we had our kids tested. They'll be going back to their Christian school that they were at before we went to Africa, and everybody did great. So we're very thankful. The teachers did a wonderful job. We use that same technique for making the trusses up for the new house. We had to get everything notched and set. And all of this stuff is an opportunity to teach the guys. They live in round mud houses that they don't build. So straight, level, plumb doesn't mean anything to them. So the level is a curiosity to them. But things are going well. We also built a house for Donna using the same foundation technique. We slabbed everything out. But then we switched over to a new brick technique. We were using regular burnt bricks that we were getting locally, but they're very porous, they're very poorly fired, very unevenly fired, and we found that termites go right through them. We've started making stabilizer earth bricks using a hydroform press. You make a mixture of the local soil. You have to mix some sand in it. You've got to get the ratio of sand and clays right, but then you mix it with cement. Once you ferry the material on site, whether it's the sand or the soil, you mix it up, put it into this press. The hydroform press is a hydraulic motor on a diesel engine with a big ram. And it rams this stuff at about 10,000 PSI. You can use as low as 5% cement up to 10% or more, depending on how hard you want these bricks to be. But they come out, and they're tongue and groove. They're tongue and groove front and back and top and bottom. So you're able to lay them up really fast with a very minimum amount of mortar. You don't have to plaster them. They're very strong. Now, we have two cymbal rams, which are basically a manual method of doing the same thing. You fill it up the same way. You press it by hand. This you're able to do without fuel. But as you can see, it's just a regular shaped brick. So you'd have to lay those up just like regular bricks. They're still good, but we wound up not using those for our house. The kids got all excited about bricks, so we had a couple of brick projects on the side. But you can see we laid up the walls of Donna's house with these hydroform bricks, using a steel frame, steel door. We also made a steel roof system. And then we thatched it. Now, you'd think that's pretty much an inedible house except for the thatch. And the thatch should be pretty safe, you'd think. But Martha and I were walking around that house, and those walls are about 8 feet high. The termites had put tubes all the way up the walls to get to that thatch. They're awful. They're really bad. We used those same bricks for the interior partitions of the house, which worked out really well. We made up all the doors on site out of the scraps that were left over from the holes from the shipping containers. And we put a steel roof on it. Now, we did pour a concrete deck on the offices, trying to get the roof lines all to tie in. And we built a parapet wall around it, and it worked out to be a pretty nice place to sit. So I'll build a railing up there eventually. The initial kitchen we built at the main compound, the termites have completely destroyed it. They've eaten it completely. The RPCNA team that just left just now, Ed and Jeremiah and Dan Wright, all three were back there. They made a new kitchen using this technique. This is what we put in the new house. It's all steel and cement. We were able to put a solar and wind system in the house. Craig Aldean was a tile setter in South Dakota before he came, so we were able to get these terracotta tiles and lay them into place. And we put expanded metal lath up for the ceilings and plastered it. So there's not even any wood ceilings in the house. The house turned out very well. We're very thankful for it. We've continued to do drilling projects this past year. We've done work at Africa Bible College. We've continued farming. This is how we planted beans until we bought our seed drill. Now we plant with a seed drill. It's a lot faster. It's a lot more uniform. We still keep the women coming on for weeding. Whether it's threshing or weeding or whatever we're doing, we hire whoever will come. We're very thankful for the work of the clinic. Again, there's Dr. Previous on the lower right, and there's Christy Scott. They're the ones who started it. You can see we've got quite a bit going on there as far as buildings now. But the clinic itself is a series of converted shipping containers with a roof system over it. But as people gather at the clinic to be treated, it's a great opportunity for the pastors or the staff to share the gospel with them. We have one of the best labs, certainly in Karamoja and probably in eastern Uganda. Our pharmacy is fully stocked. As Martha said, people actually come to work. They're actually there. If you go to the government hospital up the street from us, you may or may not find anybody there. The Karamojong really don't want to go there. They call that place the cemetery, because that's where you go to die. You come to our clinic, you'll be seen. You still might die. I mean, people get sick. And sadly, often they wait so long to come. They'll go to their local witch doctor. They'll do all this other stuff, and they come when it's really too late. It's really a shame. But the whole point of the clinic is it's an opportunity for Pastor Dave, for Pastor Al, or for our staff to share the gospel. Dr. Rekirk has come 2 years in a row. We're very thankful for her. She's come and given us advice. Now, there's a new work that Pastor Dave and Pastor Al have been doing. We're very thankful for. They've worked primarily in the two villages, Nakale Village. Now, there are a bunch of manadas in Nakale Village. There are a bunch of manadas in Kopetatum Village. These are two, areas. But they've really started to spread out. They want to make sure that every home in our region has had a very clear representation of the gospel given to them. Roman Catholicism is in Karamoja in a major way, and they've syncretized many aspects of the gospel with the animistic traditional Karamojong belief system. It's a mess. These people go to Mass, and they still sacrifice bulls and goats, and they still go to the witch doctors to get magic performed. If somebody's sick, they get ritual scars cut on them. They'll come and ask Pastor Al to bless them on their way to a raid, that they'll be successful in killing the enemy. I mean, they just don't have the sense of the true gospel in that they are personally accountable to God for their sin. Their concept of sin is very different than the Bible's concept of sin. So Pastor Al and Pastor Dave have developed a series of 5 Bible studies addressing Karamojong culture head on with the gospel, and they want to go to each village around our area. They want to make sure that every manada has had a clear representation of the gospel given to them. Now, they've started this. They've been to Alamachar, and they said it was favorably received. I'm not sure what they've scheduled next. I'll find out in October how this is going. But we're very thankful that the brothers have started doing this work. Martha and I would ask that you would pray for us, that you would pray for the growth of the church in Uganda, whether it's in Mbali with the group that Phil's working with, or in Karamoja. As you can imagine, as people come to Christ, they are immediately at odds with their family and with their culture. People are in big trouble with their family if they will not participate in the ritual animal sacrifices. Men are under tremendous pressure to take other wives. Now, many of the people are already polygamous when they come to us. We don't tell them to put away your wives. You've just got a serious problem. I can't love my wife as Christ loved the church. How can you love many? That's a serious challenge. But as men come to Christ who are not polygamous, we sincerely counsel them not to be polygamous. We want them to be husbands of one wife. This has created a lot of problems for any kind of leadership training in the church. We've had guys who were potential elders, potential deacons, but they became polygamous. And Scripture says, to be an officer, you have to be husband of one wife. So pray for the discipleship of the new believers especially. Pray for the missionary study of Karamojong and the study of the culture. Karamojong language is a difficult culture. It is the goal of Dave and Al to preach, teach, and dialogue with the Karamojong in their own language. Pray for our health. We all get malaria. It's part of life there. Everybody except Al Tricarico gets malaria. We don't know why he doesn't get malaria. I want his blood. I really want a direct transfusion. Pray for our safety as we travel in the States and in Uganda. We have come to understand, living in Uganda, that the primary cause of death of missionaries is traffic accidents. The roads are awful. The vehicles are awful. Ugandan vehicles are in bad shape, and the drivers are awful. So it's a bad combination. We'd also ask that you'd pray that the government would continue to improve the infrastructure. We now have cell phones in Karamoja, in South Karamoja. We're able to call the security detach if there's a raid going on in our area. I can call the States. Pray that we would have wisdom as we deal with these diaconal things. Again, when people are trying to con you all the time, it's really hard to know when there's a legitimate need, when what to give, how to give, how can we really show the love of Christ? Are we just being fooled? We'd ask that you'd pray for safety and security in Karamoja. Again, as these people are raiding each other, it is somewhat dangerous at times, but particularly at this time, the government is disarming the Karamojong. So we'd ask that you'd pray that the government would be fair, that this would be a successful disarmament campaign. But we'd also ask that you'd pray that the Lord would give us a teacher. We're really, Martha does a lot with the mission in translation work and helping the helping the pastors with their own language study. She does a lot of Bible study stuff. And if she's a full-time homeschool mom, she's not going to have a lot of time for that stuff. We'd really like her to continue with that ministry. I think it's an important part of the work that we do. If it's the Lord's will that she's just concentrating on the teaching, that's fine. But we'd really pray that the Lord would send somebody to give her a hand. So that's basically what we wanted to say. We're around, so we'd be very happy to answer any questions. I know we're kind of pressed for time.